This is The Source. I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Today we're talking about recreation and water on the program. In our first case, dams versus kayakers. Water is a public resource, and dams often just borrow it while they're generating power. But while that water is impounded in reservoirs or forced into pipelines, it's temporarily not available in the river for boating. At the diversion dam on the Weber River, just a few miles up the canyon from the town of Ogden, the water just disappears. There's a wide, swollen reservoir backed up behind the dam, but downstream, there's just a lot of exposed rocks with a trickle of water running between, because most of the water is in a concrete pipe.
Because a hydropower plant is essentially a two-step process where you divert the water into a pipe, and in the pipe, you generate head, and the head is what drives the turbine. If it's just in the river, you don't have any pressure, you're not generating hydrostatic or head pressure in order to drive the turbine.
I'm with Charlie Vincent. He's an engineer, but that's not why he's here. He's here because he's a boater, a kayaker specifically, and a volunteer with American Whitewater, a nonprofit organization that protects rivers for a variety of reasons, one of which is recreation.
Someplace right in here is where you'd carry your boat down and put in, and obviously there'd have to be more water, and then the activity starts right at the top of this bend.
American Whitewater works to provide something called recreational releases on dammed rivers like the Weber. A recreational release means that the dam doesn't siphon off the river to make power. The water is released from the gates and flows back into the river in its natural channel. Every 30 years or so, privately owned hydropower projects like the one PacifiCorp operates on the Weber have to reapply for their operating license from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. This relicensing process is a window of opportunity for groups like American Whitewater to come to the table as stakeholders in the river.
Water in a river is a public resource. That's undeniable. And everybody wants to use that water for their own benefit. The relicensing process under the Federal Power Act gives everyone theoretically an equal share. I don't know if it's truly equal, but I mean that is the goal. To let every stakeholder, in a balancing process, to have everyone's needs met.
Charlie Vincent was instrumental in restoring recreational flows to the Bear River through southeastern Idaho. Representing American Whitewater, he participated in a relicensing process that took over a decade. In 2008, the new license for the dam at Grace, Idaho, called for 16 recreational releases annually.
I guess the more people that are interested in the sport and the place where it happens, the more it perpetuates the opportunity for others to do it and to share in it. I mean, publicity is a good thing. You know, a lot more people do the Bear now than used to do it. So, yeah, it's a giving back to the community.
Vincent has a kid now, and he doesn't kayak as much as he used to through these temporarily inundated sections of river he's worked on. But he's still at it when it comes to advocating for good boating, as well as protection for native fish like the Bonneville cutthroat trout.
I mean, the Weber's kind of always, I remember a decade or more ago looking to see when the relicensing of this came up, and it was so far in the future.
The license expires in a few years, so the process starts now for Charlie Vincent. That's why we're here today, staring at the boulders in the low-flowing river. Vincent has no trouble imagining the whitewater that could be flowing through here. He can describe every move he would make in his kayak to pick his way through the rocks and currents of this exhilarating stretch of the Weber River. Charlie Vincent's work on the Bear River opened up recreational releases through a stretch called the Black Canyon. It's this tight basalt canyon just downstream from Grace, Idaho, that turns into a world-class kayak run a few times a year during the releases. There's a whitewater festival every year at Black Canyon during one of the initial releases. Kayakers come from all around the country to race through the temporary rapids. When I first heard about the recreational releases at Black Canyon from some of my friends who were headed to the festival, I had a lot of questions. Why can you only run it 9 times a year? How can kayakers force a hydropower company to basically turn off a dam? How important can fun be when it comes to negotiating the uses of a river? This is what led me to Charlie Vincent, who explained a lot to me about how kayakers end up at dam relicensing meetings. But I knew I needed to ask the power company what they were thinking, so I called them up.
You're now joining the meeting.
Hi, thank you. I'm Eve Davies. I am the principal scientist for hydro resources here for Pacific Corp. I work mostly for the hydro resource department, handling a lot of the environmental issues.
My name is Dave Eskelson. I'm company spokesman for Rocky Mountain Power. Rocky Mountain Power is a division of Pacific Corp, and Pacific Corp provides electric service to 1.8 million customers in 6 western states.
It's a long road to get to how whitewater recreation figures into the equation. Hydropower only accounts for 6% of the electricity generated by Rocky Mountain Power, so we're talking about maybe the smallest stake on the smallest source of power in the state. But it wasn't always that way.
Salt Lake City was the 5th city in the world to get Central Station electric lighting in 1881. And much of those early electric resources were hydroelectric.
Mill Creek, Big Cottonwood Creek, and several other, you know, smaller facilities all had some of the earliest hydroelectric generation. And 2 of those stations are still working right now, which is really supremely interesting. They're cool old facilities that operate right now. They're both built in the 1890s, both still function today.
And that must be a very small amount of power that they're generating.
It is by today's standards. At the standards of the time, it was major sources of generation. Many of those early plants were built to serve mining interests, particularly the gold and silver mining in Park City and the Tintic districts. And it was from that genesis in the mining industry that cities and towns then became interested in using electricity for street lighting and for streetcars.
And that was basically the entire load for quite a bit of time. Well, probably a couple decades anyway. There weren't any appliances to plug in. There were light bulbs and street lights and the trolley. So that was the vast majority of what was on the grid, of what was electrified.
Obviously, our need for and use of electricity grew exponentially throughout the 20th century, and so did the population. Utah quickly outgrew what the local creeks could provide with hydroelectricity.
And that's when the company began to invest in coal plants, but also the company, starting about in 1909, began developing hydroelectric plants on the Bear River. And for many years, that was one of the major sources of electricity for Utah, southeastern Idaho, and western Wyoming.
So there's a brief history of hydroelectricity in Utah. Obviously, things changed a lot in the 60s and 70s with developments in coal and natural gas. There's not enough water in arid Utah to meet the electrical needs of modern life. But there are still dams on the Bear and the Weber Rivers, and they are still producing power. There are technical supply and demand reasons as to why Rocky Mountain Power keeps these small hydropower projects around, but a lot of them have outlived their use. Sometimes when the relicensing period comes up, the company decides to decommission or remove a dam if they can't justify its existence. Knowing that some of the dams were placed on Utah rivers when Grover Cleveland was president, it's not surprising that things have changed in water and energy policy. It's changed a lot even since the 1970s when some of the more modern hydropower projects were built. There wasn't a Clean Water Act. There wasn't a Federal Environmental Protection Agency until 1970, and the Endangered Species Act didn't come around until 1973. To get back to recreation, whitewater kayaking wasn't really a thing back then, let alone a priority. A watershed moment came in 1986. Dave Eskelson explains.
There was a law that was passed in 1986 called the Electric Consumers Protection Act. And it was kind of a later act in a series of mostly federal initiatives that really changed and focused the electric utilities' emphasis on how it does business. And I think for much of our history, you know, up into the 1970s, 1980s, electric power was considered a primary usage of hydroelectric dams on the river. But that 1986 law also put recreational and wildlife habitat, including fish habitat, on equal footing with those concerns, and required electric utilities in their operations to account for all of those. They're sometimes competing uses, but to try to achieve a balance.
Now we're getting somewhere. Now I can finally ask a power company representative why on earth they're willing to spill water for a kayaking festival.
Because that's the law. And we understand a lot more about the relationship between rivers and the environment than we did in the 1930s, when so many of the big dams were built, and particularly, you know, the 1890s and early 1900s, when a lot of these projects went in. They were mostly focused at that time on irrigation, flood control, generation of hydropower. So as we have learned more about not only power production, but also protecting our environment, we are certainly willing to do more things to try to, again, achieve that balance between the various uses that our water resources have for both practical kinds of considerations, but also recreation as well.
Because times have changed and government regulation has kept up with changing values, priorities, and attitudes of the American people. That's the answer. But it's still someone's job to sit everyone down and figure out how to share the river. Obviously, not everyone gets what they want out of these negotiations. The relicensing process is often contentious, it's often litigious, but sometimes it works out, like on the Bear River. There were originally four projects going up for relicensing at the same time. Before they even really got started, Rocky Mountain Power decided to remove one of them, the Cove facility. Because like I mentioned earlier, sometimes they can't really justify these small projects, especially since mitigation for things like fish habitat can cost more money than a dam brings in. The Bear River negotiations have a happy ending. Pretty much everyone got what they wanted. Here's Eve Davies.
We worked really hard to craft an agreement when we're talking about those three facilities on the Bear that we relicensed in 2003. It was unanimously signed by all of the parties, a settlement agreement that basically said, here's what we're going to do to minimize the impact of our facilities on the river. And everyone agreed that our first order of business was to try and improve things for the Bonneville cutthroat trout. And, of course, that includes all the other aquatic species along with it. So we have reduced our generation flows and increased the flows that are in the river all the time, not just for recreation, but for the fish. And then on top of that, we also agreed that we needed to provide these recreational releases, these additional flows, for whitewater enthusiasts so they could get into the Black Canyon. Because before that, the only time folks were in the Black Canyon was when there was so much water that there was enough water to run the Black Canyon and our pipe was still full at the same time that we were running the hydroelectric plant. So now we turn the hydroelectric generation off. We put the water in the canyon to create these recreational releases.
I think in Black Canyon we came up with something that is really remarkable in that I think we were able to satisfy everybody's concerns and come up with something that was not only workable but actually a huge benefit to all concerned.
A little side note. To be perfectly transparent and because it's kind of adorable. While working on the Bear River relicensing agreement, Eve Davies spent a lot of time in meetings with various stakeholders, including a certain volunteer from American Whitewater named Charlie Vincent. Eve jokes that the process was so collaborative that she and Charlie got married and they had a baby after it was all said and done. That was over 10 years ago. The Bear River relicensing went smoothly, but Eve Davies and PacifiCorps have even higher hopes for the Weber River process. The license expires in 2020, and they're already working on something called the pre-application document, which outlines the project for all potential stakeholders. Dave Eskelson remembers the last time the Weber went through this process in 1990.
I'm just old enough that I am seeing the licensing process for the Weber plant starting over again. When I was a newspaper reporter in the 1980s, that process was beginning, and it made quite a bit of news headlines just in the field of focus that I was in as a newspaper reporter, and that relicensing process was going on when I left the news business and went to work for the power company.
It's important to remember that boating is fun. Whitewater is exciting. Rivers are beautiful. It's hard to measure our emotional attachment to water, but in some ways, even a corporation like Rocky Mountain Power takes it into consideration.
Both Dave and I recreate on the water. I haven't been down Black Canyon, so I probably won't anytime soon. I won't speak for Dave on that. But we both enjoy water recreation. So, you know, I think everybody has a vested stake sort of all throughout this process. Like we've kept talking about, water is a public resource. So.
I think when you talk about, when you mentioned the importance of recreation, I would agree, and I think the company agrees, that recreation is important.
How important is it? It's hard to say. There's not really a metric for it unless you count the acre feet of water released 9 times a year at Black Canyon, for instance. Is it a lot? Is it enough? For some boaters it is, for some it isn't. Eve Davies encourages people to get involved in the process, to come to relicensing meetings for the Weber River if they want to have a say in how the river gets used. Charlie Vincent will be there, for sure.
How avid of a boater are you now?
It'll be 3 years this summer that I haven't been in my boat.
Oh, man.
Bigger problem for my boating career is that I have chosen to be try to be a better parent. And I have a 4.5-year-old, so. And I guess I'm in too deep on the relicensing stuff, so it's hard to walk away now.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice in itself, you know? For other people, right?
It doesn't feel like a sacrifice. It just, I mean, it's a way that I can contribute to a sport and to people that I really care about. You know, this is a really important, it's taught me a lot about myself and gotten me to a lot of beautiful places. And it's, you know, good to be able to share that with others.
Next up, Don't Put Your Feet Down. The source's Ross Chambliss has the exciting legal drama of stream access in Utah. Stay tuned.